Good afternoon, gardeners. You're listening to Garden Planet with Selena and Karen.
Hey, Selena. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you.
I missed you a bit last week, but it was nice that you had a little bit of a break. And hopefully you tuned in and listened to our show all about hedges.
Yep. Picked up some interesting tidbits
there. There was, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So thanks, Andrew, for coming in. Today we are going to be discussing gardening in the good old days, pre-Mitre 10, King's Plant Barn,
Palmers,
and whatever else that we just pay money for.
And just without any sort of thought, just go, oh, I need this, and off we trot, and it's done, sorted, just like that. I know, it's too easy.
We're
spoiled.
Yeah. So what did we do before that?
Well, okay, so I'm going to, you know me, Selena.
You got the whole history there.
I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a history on shopping.
Okay? Oh.
Don't worry, it's only a paragraph.
Yep.
Okay, don't freak out, Selena, it's all right. So before the time of shops, malls, centres and, of course, online shopping.
Yes.
People all around the world would once barter. Okay, that was how things were done. Bartering is a system of exchange in which participants directly exchange goods or services for other goods or services without using a medium of exchange such as money. Official currency actually first came about in nearby shops during the 8th century when the Anglo-Saxon King of Mercia, King Offa, introduced the silver penny. And thereafter, the beginning of the English pound sterling. The pound sterling is the oldest currency and is still, as we know, in use.
Really?
So I guess it wasn't until the 8th century, 700s, that we started having the ability to just go to a store or a market and buy stuff. And let's face it, in those times, especially my ancestors, the Danes, they were always looking to plunder silver.
And pillage.
Silver was well sought after. So, and it wasn't, a lot of people were after the gold doubloons and silver.
My ancestors, which were Chinese, and they had money, but I don't know about the markets and whether...
I reckon a lot of bartering and market type setups.
Yeah.
But this is just what I got from Wikipedia. I just Googled the history of money, thinking it would give me as a bit of an insight into the whole shopping thing began.
It
began with the pound.
Okay.
So,
according to Wiki.
And so today we're going to be focusing on, because... You know, New Zealand was first settled by European settlers. I'm pretty sure some of them would have brought pounds with them
or
pennies.
And the Māori were like, what is this?
Exactly. So I thought that would be so they started coming to New Zealand in the 1800s, which is 1,000 years after that first penny was introduced. Yeah. So they were very much familiar with this system.
Yeah.
They then ended up coming to shore to a land with nada in terms of like shops and money and
exchange.
So I thought, you know, how interesting and bizarre
for
those people.
Two muskets for one.
They started getting back into bartering and the ways that were.
Yeah.
And I have no issues with that. I mean, I still, you know, I'll give someone something for something else, you know, even today.
Trade and exchange.
No worries. No issues with that. I sound kind of a bit Jaffa-ish because I sort of feel like when I leave the big smoke and go for, say, a weekend away in the countryside or whatever, I hear myself saying, oh, heck, I need some supplies or whatever. Where's the mall?
Oh.
And I'm shamefully, you know.
You've become city-fied.
I've become a bit like my ancestors that landed on the shores in 1870.
They need their...
They probably were thinking, huh?
Yeah.
You know, where's the local store?
Yeah, where's...
I need some flour or I... Yeah. I'm a bit embarrassed about that, I must say. But obviously the settlers that did arrive in Aotearoa, they clearly managed to achieve survival. Okay, they flourished, they... So this meant, of course, one of the first things, shelter, but also establishing consistent food sources. And because they didn't have pack and save, growing food was a must for these people. So how exactly did they obtain those essential items that any gardener today would, without even thinking about it, just go to a shop and get, even if you were growing your own food? So aside from bartering with Maori, and I know for a fact that they did have gardens because we've done a bit of history, gardening history, on another show.
The Maori.
So they definitely, the Maori and the settlers, they definitely had gardens and they all did. So how? How did they do it? Because I would personally think if they took away Mitre 10 and all that, I would think, well, I would probably have a little bit of a panic attack.
Would you?
Well, I did during the lockdown when all of that was shut up, all those conveniences. I was like a little bit like, how am I going to do this? A little bit.
Yeah.
So it got me thinking. Yeah, that's why I thought this would be quite,
quite topical.
I know it's probably obvious to some, but for a lot of people.
If you're so used to just going up to the shops and getting supplies.
Yeah.
And you do that every week, then when it's taken away.
Yeah. So I wanted to start with how they got gardening tools.
Okay.
Because I certainly don't make my own tools. I mean, do you? I don't know anyone that... Maybe my gran... they did. I know this because...
Well...
I researched it.
Okay, so...
Well, they would bring them on their sailing vessels along with seeds and plants. They brought them with them.
Yeah.
And they would repair them as their tools needed. So if it needed sharpening or something broke on it, they would fix it. There was no other option.
Yeah.
That's how it was done. So I'm assuming, well, I'm not assuming, that was how my ancestors did it. Yep. Something broke, you fixed it.
So.
You don't chuck it in the skip.
No.
And then go and get another one. Or in, like the case of my parents that seemed to be, I used to call them hoarders. They hated it. They'd buy like three of them.
Oh, in case something broke.
It's so much stuff in the garage. It was ridiculous.
Well, still have to sharpen your tools and things, but some of the tools that we get today are quite not durable, and they just...
I find that too.
They kind of, go all...
I don't know how often I've bought... say a pair of secateurs or something like that, and I thought, they look nice and shiny and they do the job, and I can understand sharpening, I'm happy to do that.
Yeah.
But, they sort of...
They fall apart.
Yeah,
they?
Like so one hardwood tree or branch or something, and that's like, now they're not... So a number of times I've taken them to my husband and said, because he used to be a tradie.
Yeah.
So he kind of has an idea of how things work and fit together. And so... I've had to do that quite a bit, and then off you'll go down to the shed and tweak things up.
Yeah.
So I guess I am kind of doing it just out of the fact that I'm like, I've only just bloody brought them, you know.
Exactly.
I'm not going to go and buy them. Often he'll make them better than what they were.
Yeah, you need to look after your tools, but some of them are so cheaply made that...
Even ones that you have spent a bit of money on, sometimes I'm like, there's nothing that can go wrong here. I've just spent $70.
Yeah.
And then, lo and behold,
that's
not even a guarantee. Mm. Occasionally the settlers would trade their imported tools with the Maoris for food, wood, flax, and even sexual intercourse. So, am I prepared to do that? For a spade. I don't know. Maybe back in the day?
Back in the day if you were desperate? What would you have to offer?
And then I reckon every year I would buy a bag of at least two bags of potting mix. One or two. How many bags of potting mix would you buy?
Yeah, maybe three or four.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they'd come in the ready sacks. So imagine not having that. You have to mix up your own by hand.
Yeah. And this, okay, so this was something that I would regularly purchase and, yeah,
yeah.
Most, yeah. First of all, the settlers didn't use pots, okay?
No, they, no.
They would probably be very amused knowing how much potting mix New Zealanders purchase in a year.
Oh, how much?
I would say tons.
Yeah, yeah.
Tons of it. Because they would just generally plant into the topsoil.
Mm. Well, their soil was actually probably more fertile back in the day.
I reckon
day.
It would have been amazing.
Whereas now, I mean, everyone
untouched.
Cuts it away when they're building things and compacting
it down.
And
they've sprayed it and
it's
basically...
just like you have to buy it nowadays, otherwise you're just planting into clay.
Yeah. So, and the other thing is... topsoil is dirt, potting mix isn't. This is something
That's
thought I'd just
true.
Add
yeah.
because it's like, well, yeah. it's a gardening show, so yeah. we might as well add a bit of information re-potting mix.
Yeah.
True potting mix is actually soilless. It's made up of 50% of solid materials, 25% water and 25% air.
Mm.
So that's why I said the settlers would probably be cracking up, going, what?
Why are you buying this?
But if you do have pots, it's a must, I think, because it's designed to hold moisture and nutrients around the plant roots. That's what it's designed for.
Mm.
And to provide enough air for growing roots to be able to breathe and not rot within the container. So I guess it's simply a matter of different times, different needs.
Yeah.
For that one.
Also, Karen, you just mentioned, oh, they didn't even have pots, but maybe they had the terracotta ones.
Oh, okay.
But they didn't have, obviously, plastic back in the day. But, yeah, that plastic has revolutionised how we live.
And you can get so many different, you can get square ones and round ones and tall ones. And and some of them are mad, that plastic they use, they're massive pots. And you think, oh, my gosh, and you lift it up, it's not even heavy. It's amazing material.
All those, that potting mix is wrapped in plastic as well, as plastic sacks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plastic pots for when we...
Oh, don't even get me started on the plastic discussion.
Okay, we'll just leave that for another show.
We have actually done plastics in the garden.
We have talked about it. And
but, yeah.
We're not so impressed how
I wonder what if you took all these plastic things, you know, back in time and
what's
said,
this?
And I'd be like, what is this?
Why is it all
material?
What is you can see through it, but it's not glass.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
A revolution. It's a great product, but we've just overdone it. That's the thing, isn't it? We've become so dependent on it.
Yeah.
So that was that. And then, of course, what? No Roundup?
Oh, they didn't have that, no.
No.
They just...
Before the days of commonly used herbicides and pesticides, unless, of course, you're an organic gardener like Selena and myself, where we avoid them, let me rephrase that, the ones that are like non-organic, although I have noticed in the garden centres there's definitely more natural...
Yeah, starting to...
Ones
they all say they're natural now.
Yeah, true that. Be careful with that one, eh? Yeah. But of course they would use a lot of, because they had pests.
Of course, they'd trap them.
So they had their own natural remedies, and I'm going to name a few for you.
Oh, which ones?
Hand picking.
Yes.
Shaking pests off the crops was one such method.
Yeah.
I found a funny reference to this regarding hairy caterpillars, which reads, quote, pay the children to collect by the quart.
That's a good one.
Adjust planting times to disadvantage the pest.
Yes.
I am big on that one at the moment because so many of my plants that I planted late in the summer are just getting absolutely annihilated.
Massacred.
What a disaster. I should have planted earlier.
Yeah,
that was my fault this year.
Yeah.
So, yeah, enhance plant growth and vigour with manure fertilisation. So get your plants strong. And even if I find that if you've got a strong plant, few pests, you can have them on almost every leaf, but they still seem to ride it out.
Yeah.
Like my citrus at the moment, no worries, don't even have to spray that anymore. It's absolutely covered in whitefly.
Yeah.
But the fruit's just every year.
Yeah.
I don't even, yeah. Sanitary practices such as burning after harvest.
Mm.
Selection of pest-resistant plant varieties.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good one. Construction of physical barriers to pests, for example, tree banding with sticky substances.
Mm.
And use of toxic and noxious substances such as whitewash. So I don't know if this is considered natural or not natural. I don't know. But whitewash, which is like paint that's diluted.
What?
And glue mixed together.
Okay.
They would use tobacco, walnut, hops, sulfur, soap suds, whale oil, resin, lime and turpentine. So they,
turpentine.
I guess, did.
Okay. What was available in those days, yeah.
Yeah, did find ways to do it. I don't know. I think probably, is there a time for hardcore, yeah. Maybe they just didn't overdo it like we do these days. Have you seen the way they apply?
Yeah, totally, yeah.
To the crops and stuff? Yeah. Like just drench them with those massive...
The big farmers.
Irrigation.
Aerial. Those top dressing and all that kind of thing.
Yeah. And with regard to herbicides, not so much an approach. So herbicide is a chemical that kills plants, weeds. Wasn't so much an approach employed by the early settlers because they didn't have huge crops.
No.
So there wasn't
this. Small scale.
Yeah.
Yep.
But methods of weed control were hand weeding or burning.
Well, they wouldn't have had tractors and all the machinery.
Mm.
So.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of settler history, gardening, and how they managed without Mitre 10.
What about mowing the lawns? They wouldn't have had lawn mowers.
Mm. They might have just started planting them, eh?
The really wealthy people had lawns.
Right.
But then they had slave labour.
Yes.
And
with scissors.
Maybe sheep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they had those lawn mowers that you... push, like,
oh, yeah, the push
the
ones.
Little manual one, like, yeah. Without the motors.
Yeah.
Those are so cool. I so want one of those.
Oh, okay.
I've got too big a lawn, though. It'd be driving nuts. But I remember my friend had one, and Maximus, when he was, like, younger,
yes.
my son, would just love just pushing it up and down their lawn. He was fascinated
good exercise, people. Good exercise.
She didn't mind.
Okay, talking about slave labour, shall we go to a plant of the week?
Let's do that.
Of all the saddest words that I have ever heard, the saddest is a story told me by a bird. He'd spent about an hour chatting with a flower, and here's the tale the flower told. Quote, I'm a lonely little petunia in an onion patch.
Okay, our plant of the week, yes, it has something to do with slave labour. Karen, what do we wear? What is a plant that we wear?
Hemp?
Could
you knew I was going to be difficult, no. Selena.
No, it's not hemp.
Would it be, off the top of my head, cotton?
Yes, it's cotton. Okay.
I can't think of any other... I'm sure there's other natural ones out there. There's got to be. There is.
Flax, but I think we talked about flax before, so I picked another plant that was quite interesting. And we don't really grow it in New Zealand, but it's such an important plant for we want to wear for clothes and fibre.
It is an important plant indeed.
And people used to call it the vegetable sheep. Because the cotton, like wool, can be spun into yarn and made into clothing.
Yes.
So, cotton. So you don't really see it much around here because it likes to grow in the subtropical climate. It's actually native to America, but a lot of it is grown in India these days. But yes... because of this wonderful fibre which the cotton plant produces in its seed pods, like cotton balls, and people figured out, we can use this for fibre. It has become like a huge industry. And
indeed.
And to pick all the cotton, what did they need?
Yeah.
Field. People.
Field.
Hundreds of them.
Negroes. Yes.
People.
Well, in those days, it was the Negro people.
Yeah.
They would use as slaves.
Didn't have machinery, so.
Go out in that hot sun.
Yeah.
I reckon you could grow cotton in New Zealand these days in some areas.
To give it a go.
Wouldn't that? I think we need to start thinking about things like this because I feel like globalisation has reached its, well, I don't want to say end because I love seeing the world. It's so interesting. But in terms of carbon footprints and all that kind of thing, yeah, we need to start thinking locally.
Okay. So going back to cotton, it was until the invention of the cotton gin, which separated the cotton balls from the seeds, and then you could make the fibre, that sort of caused it to be industrialised. And then there was a big demand for it, and then they had planted more. And had
so that was like the turning point.
Yeah, plantations.
The plant gin.
Yeah, no, the cotton gin. Yeah.
So
according to my stats, that took 3 slaves to operate a cotton gin. You could have 50 pounds of cotton a day.
Mm.
And then, because then they were producing more, then they had to grow more, and then it just got bigger and bigger, and that's the whole, entire, say, USA, Southern States of America, where they had all the slave trade and everything, so that was how that came about.
Mm.
But if they were using the modern gins like these days of the machinery, you can make produce up to 15 tons per hour. So
that's a lot.
They don't use slaves much anymore, but I think it's still happening in certain parts of the world.
Well, I've worked in a factory before and it feels like slave labour.
So
I'm just being a bit precious though.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a long day.
Imagine picking cotton all day, filling up all those sacks.
Yeah. I think I'd rather be in a factory than and doing, whatever they do to with the machinery there than in a hot field in the sun doing it all by hand.
Oh.
And then they had to take it, and then they would go into sheds and use those
cotton gins.
So that'd be like part two of the process.
Mm. So if you think, I'm wearing cotton at the moment. Are you wearing cotton?
Yep.
Yeah. So all the material that we're wearing comes from this plant, cotton plant. The Latin name is called Gossypium hirsutum. So hirsute means furry or hairy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it is. They're so cute. They're such cute looking plants. Yeah. So they're like little puff balls out in the,
They are annual, so they need to be grown each year and produce seeds and planted again.
Yeah.
They belong to the mallow family, which is the same plants as like hibiscus and hollyhocks, that kind of plant.
Yeah.
And yes, they like to grow in the warm areas, so they don't like frost. So they couldn't grow like further south of Bombay's probably.
Mm.
And did you know?
So they are quite frost sensitive.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's not just white cotton, there's other colours.
I was going to ask you if there were other colours.
Yes. There's green, brown, pink, blue or yellow.
Wow.
So they're naturally that colour, then you don't have to dye it.
Yeah.
But the biggest demand was for white cotton, so that's what a lot of plantations would grow. Yeah. And it's the seed pods that produce the lovely fluffy balls.
Mm.
Yeah. But the thing is, the cotton plant is restricted to grow in the US because of it's actually illegal in some parts to grow it because of the cotton boll weevil, which is a little pest they have trouble with. If they're growing huge numbers of them, it can wipe out whole, plantations.
So
you need a permit to grow it and sort of have to get that under
control.
They
don't want too many plantations.
Yeah. Otherwise, it would just devastate the entire crop.
So they need to keep in case. It's a bit like that. I can't remember the name of the pest with the vineyards here.
Phytophthora. Something of the fungus.
That one, and they've had to segregate certain vineyards.
Oh, PSA. PSA for kiwi fruit.
Isn't that, yeah, similar. Right. And they have to do that. They have to keep them segregated because it's such a threat.
Yeah.
Mm.
So, yeah, the cotton takes 4 months to mature from seed to harvest. So it needs a long growing season.
A long, hot.
Yeah. It self-pollinates and, it doesn't like it too wet. But all it needs is, nitrogenous fertilizer, like fish fertilizer or something, and you mulch them. So I'd love to give it a go to grow a cotton plant and see what it can produce, but might be have a hard time finding the seeds or the plants here in New Zealand.
So no one grows it here.
Well, I haven't actually seen it around, so maybe people do, but they're just not telling us.
It would be an industry worth looking at, definitely.
Yeah. Mm. I mean, we wear cotton practically all the time, don't you?
I know people are growing hemp and then using those fibres.
Yeah.
That's certainly a textile product that we can grow here quite easily, and people are starting to.
Might give sheep a run for their money.
And of course the wool's the other one,
yeah,
obvious one,
yeah.
But apparently the wool industry is in decline, which is weird
because of synthetic fibres.
I mean, wool.
I know wool is a very good fibre to. It is intensive, but I suppose not as intensive as growing cotton to produce.
Yeah, I mean, I have a lot of synthetic clothes in my wardrobe too. I will admit. But I've got like a lot of natural ones too.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's, I think some, I don't know, I reckon there'd be a lot of people that wouldn't have wool these days.
Yeah, acrylics maybe. But then you have to weigh up all the labour to produce it versus all the chemicals to produce the other kind of fibres.
And the other thing is with the synthetics is that when you wash them,
they're not so good. Eh?
Well, I've managed to shrink quite a few wool tops in my time as well. You've got to be careful with that too. But they release these little plastic fibres into the water when you in your washing machine.
No.
And then
they go into the ocean.
So it's like quite harmful having all these plastics in the waterways from the washing machines. Yeah. It's crazy. I saw a documentary and they showed a filter.
Yeah.
Of the stuff that comes out of a typical washing machine, and it was just full of plastic.
Oh,
yeah.
It's terrible. Anyway, so that's cotton.
They reckon that there's more plastic in the ocean than fish now. There's more pieces of plastic than fish. Sorry, I heard that a couple of days ago. Is that supposed to be like an achievement? I don't. Well done!
Plastic ocean. Oh dear. Okay. So, anyway, that was cotton, and I just thought I'd share that with you.
Thank you. That was really interesting.
It was interesting, and think about all the entire cotton empire.
Oh, yeah.
What was happening back in the day.
It was a game changer.
Yeah.
I think that a lot of America's. Greatness came about through these sort of endeavours, the cotton industry, and there was various others. But
then you think back in the olden days and the clothes that they wore and the skirts for the women and how huge they were and they were all made out of cotton and all the frills and the corsets and all of that.
Yeah.
Did they have to wear so much massive dresses?
Big demand. I know. Interesting times,
Okay.
I know when we were saying about the settlers coming to New Zealand, I think, imagine just lugging around all those big dresses and then having to start from scratch.
Yeah,
I mean, all you need is just a pair of dungarees. Hey, they could be cotton.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, people.
Dungarees and gumboots.
Gardening in the good old days or gardening any day.
I'm a big fan of keeping it real. But hey, I'd garden in a dress any time as well. But anyway, we're rambling.
Happy gardening, people.
Okay, bye guys.
Bye.